It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena. Mayor Phil Goff, how are you this morning?
Morena, yeah. I'm just reflecting on long weekends and how it's great having the Monday off, but then you push all the Monday appointments into Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday, and that's not quite so great.
Yes, it is always the way. Hey, we've got some big topics to talk about today. We're going to start with the COVID protection framework and see where we can get from there. This was a big announcement on Friday, obviously moving away from the alert level system we currently have in Aotearoa into this more sort of traffic light based protection framework. It's going to take a little bit of getting used to, I think, especially while we are still essentially in the alert level system right now. But we've seen a few really key announcements for what it means for Tamaki Makaurau, particularly when we hit 90% double vaccinated across all of our DHBs, we're going to start moving into this framework, and it's going to require things like vaccination passports. It's going to mean still restrictions in venues, and it's also going to mean a lot of things not available to those who are unvaccinated. Now, what are your takeaways from the big announcement on Friday? Anything in particular that stood out for you for Aucklanders?
Yeah, first of all, we've now got a clear target, which is 90% double vaxxed, which is ambitious, but it is achievable. And we're already on the first vaccination, about 93% in Auckland DHB, 90% in Waitemata, and 88% in Counties Manukau. So we need to get Counties Manukau, they need about another 11,000 people to be vaccinated to have their first dose. And then, of course, it's 3 weeks after that before you can get your second, and not quite everybody does, but most do. But look, I think they've found a good balance. It'll be a very high standard internationally for having vaccination, but we know the greater percentage of people vaccinated, the greater the protection. Secondly, there are huge incentives built into this, and people that are anti-vaxxers won't like it, but that's tough. What we know about being vaccinated is that you're 70% less likely to transmit the disease and you're 96% less likely to end up in hospital. So if you decide you're not going to get vaccinated, your decision also impacts on others and impacts on our hospital system. And I think this will create a degree of incentive, not for the anti-vaxxers, but for the people that just haven't got around to doing it, to say, hey, we want to live normally. And there's a whole lot of things that we won't be able to do unless we get vaxxed. And I think that will help us get to it.
Now, you go.
Sorry, just the third thing was that a pretty good package for business support. Businesses have been finding it really, really tough, and doubling the resurgence support package is going to be really useful. And I'm continuing to work with Grant Robertson on some further things that we might be able to do for Auckland, in part around changing liquor licensing so we can have that al fresco dining outside. And I've just been asking for some recognition to Aucklanders, because we've been under this now, for over 11 weeks. It has been a pressure on us, and sometimes people in the rest of the country don't understand, what it's like to have those restrictions for the length of time we've been going through. So we haven't seen the end of the package yet, but what
is
we have
a,
got so
is there
far
a timeline,
was a good step forward.
Is there a timeline that people can expect to maybe see some more details about that sort of second stage to that package?
I'm hoping in a couple of weeks we'll just have a little bit more we can do to help out with Aucklanders, and that's a work in progress, and I'm working on government with a number of other things to see if they'll bring back the fare subsidy for Auckland Transport, that's losing a lot of money because, of course, under level three it's you've got to provide the services, but you're losing millions of dollars. To try to get some further assistance from government on that would be really good too.
Now, speaking of Grant Robertson, he has also announced that probably later this week we're going to see more news about vaccination certificates, what that's going to look like and how it's going to function. Is Auckland Council in discussion with the government about how that's going to work practically rolling out across the city? Because we've got a lot of big venues and also a lot of people in Tamaki, and that's going to be quite a feat possibly moving into this new stage. Is that something that you're discussing at the moment?
Yeah, it's something that the government is itself responsible for and largely doing on its own, but they do talk to us about it. And the vaccination certificate is obviously critical because the traffic light system won't work without it. And that vaccination certificate will be important in the future when we open up for people to be able to travel internationally and a whole lot of other things as well. So it's important to have that that certificate. You know, I heard a bit over the weekend, oh, some people were, you know, getting other people to go and get vaccinated on their behalf, which sounds really dumb to me, both for the person that's getting vaccinated that maybe already had their shots and for the person that doesn't get the protection of the vaccination. I don't think that'll be a big deal, but, you know, it will be important just to have a few safeguards in place so that the thing works properly. But the sooner we can get to the 90%, we need a vaccination certificate for that. We can start to get our lives back and we can all go and get a haircut. We can go to hospitality up to 100 people seated and separated. We can go to weddings with, you know, and do church services up to 100 people. That's the red light. And then under green and orange, it's pretty much for the vaccinated, like life is normal, even though we will still have COVID in the community. And that's not going to go away anytime soon.
Now, that is a big mentality shift that I think people are still perhaps getting used to, moving from this, we have no COVID in the community, we can go about our normal lives, to going about some sense of normal life, but with COVID in the community. That's obviously going to change how we do normal life in quite a significant way. And I just want to talk about schools at the moment, because we have got senior students from Year 11 up heading back to school today. Well, they'll be there now, basically. And there is a little bit of anxiety around this. There'll also be some relief from folks who are happy to be back in some structure, but what's the sense you're getting from principals around the city at the moment, because it is a big change and still seems like quite an early part of this step down process that we're seeing a lot of students returning?
Yeah, mixed emotions, some anxiety, and that's understandable, particularly in the communities that are less vaccinated, you know, strong welcoming of it. Our senior school have got their exams coming up. They've already suffered quite significant disadvantage from being out of the classroom for as long as they have been. And a general, I think, you know, kids are getting bored at home and want to get out. They want to see their friends again. They want to go back to learning. They're all sick of Zoom, like I'm sick of Zoom and you're probably sick of Zoom. And all of those kids, of course, will be eligible for vaccination. So hopefully the schools will also be giving encouragement in that direction as well. And actually, I think our 15 to 18 year olds have got a higher level of vax than some other sections of the community. So they've generally done quite well. There'll be mask wearing, there'll be ventilation. You know, and we're finally, the weather's a bit warmer. That, you know, opening windows is a good way of reducing it. Mixed emotions, but I think realistically, you can't keep kids locked out of their classrooms and not able to continue with their learning.
We are seeing some schools, though, still making the decision to remain closed because they feel their communities are more vulnerable or less vaccinated at the moment. And we're also seeing reports, and perhaps not unsurprising, of certain students who have taken up jobs over the lockdown period to support their families, who are not able or have chosen not to return to schooling at this point in order to keep doing that supporting of their families. There. Do you think we need to see some more targeted and direct financial assistance and also perhaps agritech assistance in schooling from the government into those particular communities that are suffering in an acute way right now?
Yeah, I think the government is making provision for those that are not able to sit the exams, and making provision for those that do sit the exams, given the interruption to their schooling. And I think that's important. Look, make no mistake about it, this will have come at a cost education-wise. Some kids were happy to work online. Other kids didn't have the same Wi-Fi facilities at home, or places where they had a bit of space to themselves at home, found it harder. I've talked to some teachers who said, you know, sometimes we're only getting 50% of our kids online and not 100%. And you'll definitely get a situation where some kids will have made the decision this close to the end of the year, well, look, we're just going to go out and get a job now, and the family needs a bit of help too. And that's kind of got a long-term cost because kids not completing their education makes it harder for them to get the skills they want, although, you know, some of them can go out and do on-the-job training and apprenticeships, etc. So I hope that the ministry is keeping a close eye on that to try to make things as fair as possible across the board. But it goes back to the point, look, I was looking at what Sir David Skeek said over the weekend, and he was rubbishing John Key's kingdom. He said, more like Shangri-La. We've been far better than the rest of the country. We haven't lost thousands and thousands of people because of the disease. We haven't had our hospital systems overwhelmed. But we have to, you know, what this outbreak, we can't totally eradicate it now in Auckland. We did our best. It was too hard with the Delta variant. So we're getting back to life as people are finding it in other countries around the world, but hopefully with a higher level of protection from vaccination and some sensible health controls around that. Our big worry is it's spreading through. You know, COVID will become the disease of the unvaccinated, and there are some vulnerable and low-income communities that will really suffer from that.
I did want to touch briefly on that as well. We did see, we were going to talk about bipartisan housing announcement. I think we might talk about that next week because it needs its own time, really. But I do want to just ask you about a concept that's come up quite a bit in the last couple of years, and it's not a new one, but this idea of a universal basic income. We've seen some advocacy over the weekend from writers like Morgan Godfrey that perhaps an Auckland basic income is something that would be useful at this time. Do you think, I mean, I know you mentioned that there's this potential support package further down the line. We have seen certain communities, people working in these essential service jobs that are lower paid service jobs, really bearing the brunt of this long lockdown and the ongoing effects of this pandemic. Do you think that is something we need to be having a serious conversation about now?
Yeah, it's a complex area, and various governments have looked at it and in the end have decided not to go down that particular track. And it's certainly not what the government's got in mind. You know, we're looking at smaller things in terms of a further support package for Auckland. The big support package for Auckland is obviously the 70% of the $940 million that they're pouring into wage subsidies and research and support payments. I think the government is committed to an overall greater equity. And, you know, the focus on that is a topic we're not going to discuss, I guess, housing, because that's what really hammers people, you know, cost of rent, cost of paying for mortgages, and the greater investment in housing equity through greater social housing is going to be actually in some ways more worthwhile than a concept of universal income. You know, I did welcome the fact that the government, by the way, has made more money available for hardship, probably another 25,000 grants for hardship to target low-income communities. That's a stopgap measure, but nevertheless, it'll be important to those families that are getting that assistance.
Well, next week we'll come back to have a proper chat about housing, but there is a lot to get through in that big announcement from the government on Friday. So thank you for talking it through with us this morning, Mayor Phil Gough. Have a nice week, and we'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
Okay, it's a short week. Okay,
it is.
Thanks, Rachel.
Ka kite.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Gough.
Thank you.